And now, please join me in welcoming Cecile Richards and Wade Davis to the Inforum stage.
Thank you. Thank you.
Wow, you are a beautiful bunch. Thank you all so much for that warm welcome. So any initial thoughts when you come out to a crowd that is this excited to hear from you?
I wish the whole world looked like San Francisco. I'm not saying I don't get this kind of reception in every single state in America, but...
You don't get it in Texas?
I do get it in Texas, actually. Little known fact, Planned Parenthood in Texas is one of the most resilient, robust organizations in the country. Oh, really amazing. Yeah, amazing.
And you're from Texas, right?
From Texas, born and raised, yeah.
And Waco. I'm from Arkansas.
Yeah, let's hear it for Texas, okay? Yeah. We get a bad rap sometimes.
And I'm from Arkansas, so if you all hear a bunch of y'alls and stuff like that, just let them slide, deal? So I know everyone's thinking about the elephant in the room, but we're going to let that elephant wait, which is Trump. And talk about something really exciting that Planned Parenthood celebrated its 100-year anniversary this year. Wow, man, that's
right.
A big deal.
I know, exactly.
So I would love for you to just offer us some perspective of the history of the organization,
right?
Some seminal moments, and where you see the organization going.
Sure. Well, thanks. It's been an incredible year. In October, we turned 100, and we've really looked at what happened in those 100 years. So 100 years ago when Margaret Sanger and her sister Ethel opened the first birth control storefront in New York City, where I know you live now.
Oh, yeah.
It was totally illegal to give out information about birth control. But for 10 cents a piece, you could get a little pamphlet that they were handing out completely illegally. And from day one, women were lined up down the block. And the photographs of those times 100 years ago are so moving. Women with baby strollers and carrying babies in their arms, desperate to figure out how to prevent another pregnancy. And so 10 days, as the story goes, 10 days later, an undercover cop posing as a mother busted Margaret, wow, much to her excitement, threw her in jail where she taught all of her fellow inmates about birth control. And that has really been the history of the movement. And I like to think we still have that resilient fighting spirit today, and we're going to need it for sure in the years ahead, or in the months ahead, or even in the days ahead. But the amazing thing is, if you look back, women of childbearing age live 30 years less. Their life expectancy was 30 years less back then.
Wow.
Because most women of that in that era died from tuberculosis or from complications of pregnancy. And so many things have changed in 100 years. Not only now, birth control is legal, and because of President Obama, 55 million women in this country, 55 million women in this country now get it under their insurance plan at no cost, and we're going to fight to keep it that way. And, of course, abortion is now legal in America. And yes, exactly. We're going to keep that this way, too. But as a result, women now finish school. We're half the college students in America. We're half the law students and medical students. We are in the United States Senate. We have three incredible women on the United States Supreme Court. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk about them later. And sometime in our lifetime, we will have a woman president of the United States of America. But it's just amazing that in 100 years, the opportunities for women have radically changed in the United States of America. And again, I mean, I know we are facing some tough times here because of the incoming administration's attitudes about women. But I can tell you, just from a small sampling of folks since that election, women in America are not going to go back. They are going to refuse to go back to days when they didn't have the ability to make their own decisions about their health care and their pregnancies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, exactly. So now you've been a part of the organization since 2006. Mm-hmm. And since you've been involved, the number of supporters has doubled to 9 million. Mm-hmm. What is it about your leadership that has made this organization so important and galvanized so many to support it?
Well, it's not my leadership. I'd say it's just an incredible organization. And I know we have a ton of board members here and supporters of Planned Parenthood and staff of Planned Parenthood. So I want to give a shout out to all the folks in Northern California who do this work every day. You're just amazing. But I think that's why we have 9 million supporters. And when we've been under attack, because we have been under this Congress actually now for several years, Mike Pence, of course, when he was in Congress, led the efforts to defund Planned Parenthood. That's why 70,000 people have made contributions to Planned Parenthood in his name. I think the other reason is we've invested in young people, and that's just something I really believe in and Planned Parenthood believes in. They are our future patients, if not our current patients. They are our activists. They are the lifeblood of this organization. And every time that we're on the ropes or someone comes after us, it's young people in America that rise up. And that is really why we've grown. We're now on hundreds of college campuses all across America. And the interesting thing to me, Wade, is it's not just young women. Yeah. It is all young people. And because they understand that sexual health and rights are key to their future, something that you know about and you've been such an incredible advocate for your entire lifetime. I'll just make one other point, which I kind of love, especially because we're in San Francisco. Now that we're 9 million supporters strong, and actually we've gained hundreds of thousands, actually even since the election, we are now 1.5 times the membership of the National Rifle Association. And so, not that it's a competition, but
I'm going to leave that one
alone.
But since we are in San Francisco, which is one of, I would describe as kind of the hub of technology, mm-hmm. how is Planned Parenthood using technology to reach out to those same young people that you mentioned?
I love that. And I have to say, Silicon Valley and folks from, I mean, I don't even want to start naming companies because I'll miss some, but they have been such amazing partners and champions with us because, I mean, the beautiful thing about the tech field is they just believe in getting information and services to people. Yeah. They don't really believe in getting politics in the middle of it. And so getting to work with Facebook and Google and Twitter and so many, we have board members from, all over. And we have really been able to use technology to take away barriers to information and care. So as I like to think about it, that same pamphlet that Margaret Sanger gave out 100 years ago, or maybe better information, we're able to give now on the web 24/7 in English and Spanish, and 6 million visitors come every single month to get that information. We now make appointments on mobile phones, which is, of course, just radically changed the opportunity so that...
Because kids don't talk now, they just text and tweet.
Completely. Exactly. Well, and if you need to make a birth control appointment, sometimes 2 a.m. is when you're thinking about it, and we may be closed, but it might just be on your mind. And that is the great thing. I mean, for real, right? It's just like...
You're trying to get me in trouble. I can feel
no,
it already.
No, no, but you don't have to be thinking like, oh, my God, I got to wait till 9 o'clock when they're open. And that has really changed things. We now are actually able to deliver birth control in a lot of places, including California has been on the cutting edge of this birth control online. And one of my favorite... examples, it was a woman in the Arctic Circle who actually did a video conference with a clinician in Seattle at Planned Parenthood because she lived on a glacier 500 miles away from the closest health center. And 5 days later, a float plane dropped that birth control right there where she lived.
Yeah,
for real.
Wow.
Not even kidding you. Got to give it up for that. So, I mean, I think it's, to me, the whole idea of Planned Parenthood was giving folks information and healthcare that could change their lives. And there's no better example than technology. I was just visiting with folks in New York about this program. We have a text chat program. Because, you know, sometimes if you're a young person and you've got a problem or you've got something you're really worried about, you just don't want to talk to somebody about it. And the beauty of texting is if you can't get the words out, you can text them.
Yeah.
And thousands of young people every month text with Planned Parenthood, and then we get them to a health center or we get them whatever they need. That to me is the disruptive force, the combination. Planned Parenthood and technology and the web are just like a match made in heaven. So wow. It's really exciting.
As you're starting to engage with kids more, is there something for the parents in the room that they can start to maybe think about that, that kids are really trying to get information on?
Sex. Yes.
Okay. So you're saying that parents should talk to kids about sex more, right?
They okay. really should. I mean, it's like hasn't changed that much since we were kids. I mean, and I hope, look, we're very proud at Planned Parenthood to be the biggest sex educator in America. Mm. We provide sex education in all kinds of schools and in religious settings and community places. We train thousands of young people in sex education so they can be peer educators across the country. But crazily enough, as parents, our kids actually want to hear from us about sex, and not just sex like we think about the transactional part, literally about relationships
and intimacy.
And that is something that that's what we find with not only young people want to hear from parents, and parents feel woefully inadequate. But no matter what you do, just breaking that barrier and having that conversation, what we know is young people who have information that's medically accurate, that is honest, they are much more likely to make good decisions, and they're much more likely to go to their parent if they ever really are in a fix and they need to talk to somebody.
Yeah, you know, my parents never talked to me about sex.
Yeah.
And I learned about sex via online porn, which is the worst way to learn about it.
Right.
as a male, I wish that I understood that Planned Parenthood offered services that would cater to me also. So mm-hmm. I'm curious, what do men need to also know about Planned Parenthood?
Well, I think one is we do see a ton of men at Planned Parenthood. In fact, I was down in San Diego the other day to visit our health center, and I look in the waiting room, and the TV, which is usually on the soaps, is on ESPN, and in the waiting room is full of men, and then I found it was vasectomy day, actually, at the Planned Parenthood. But you don't have to come for a vasectomy. There's
no,
others.
No.
But we do a ton of, we do a ton of STI testing and treatment. We do, did that make
Sorry,
you uncomfortable?
It did not.
Super
it did
uncomfortable.
Not, it did not. My partner can get pregnant, so I think.
Yeah.
We try, though, but he can't get pregnant.
This is the way Southern folks talk.
It
I know,
is, I'm
exactly.
Sorry, yes.
I think that, not only are young men, men of all ages can come to Planned Parenthood for health care. And look, young men need sex education just like everybody else,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yes.
But also what I have been really excited to see is that so many young men are activists now. In fact, I love to brag about my son, Daniel, who when we were first under the first fight with Mike Pence about defunding, and I was, I know, every time I say his name, I hear a groan out in the audience. Incoming Vice President Mike Pence, I might say.
It's painful,
yeah,
really painful.
I just had to get it out
That's
there.
That's like a gut punch almost, you know?
No, but I remember when we were fighting the first defunding fight, and oh my God, it was crazy. And, college campuses were erupting and folks were organizing. I was at a big rally in New York. And my son Daniel, who was going to school in Western Pennsylvania, texted me and he said, Mom, and Daniel had never been really too involved in anything. He says, Mom, I'm in a van going with a bunch of kids to Ohio to rally for Planned Parenthood. I love you.
Aww.
It's like, oh my God. Love that boy. And then I thought, oh my God, if Daniel's getting a van going to Ohio, this is a movement in
yes.
America. And and so I do think it's important. I mean, I think that's going to be the change in the 21st century from Margaret's days.
Yeah.
Is that this is the issue of sexual health and rights is not a women's issue. It's an issue for every person in the world. And that to me is exciting.
Yes.
And it's important. And I think, and we may get to this, but I think sexual health services encompasses a whole lot more than just not getting pregnant, right?
Yes.
And that's the exciting thing, is to see the expansion of services at Planned Parenthood for all people who have sexual health needs, regardless of where they come from.
Yeah, and you mentioned a valid point, right, that most people think about Planned Parenthood in a very monolithic way. Could you please educate us about the myriad of services that Planned Parenthood offers?
Mm-hmm. So for 2.5 million people, we're their healthcare provider. For many folks, we're their only healthcare provider. And so for many women, they come to us because they need a breast exam, they need their pap smear, they need their well woman visit, and they might need birth control. But they see us as their healthcare provider.
Yes.
And frankly, an expert in sexual and reproductive healthcare. We see hundreds of thousands of people for sexually transmitted infection testing and treatment, and very proud to do that work. And we're very proud to be expanding transgender care around the country.
Yes,
including
that's
here
a big
in San
one.
Francisco.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, the exciting thing to me is, again, if the idea is that we, in not only in America but around the world, people should be able to go without shame or stigma to get sexual health services. That was Planned Parenthood's idea back in the beginning. It's just that it's expanded.
Yeah.
And I was actually just in North Carolina, where we just opened a new health center. And the exciting thing is we were able to open it and open transgender services at the same time.
Wow.
Literally, folks driving from across state lines to get to that health center because they needed a place that they felt welcome and safe. And I remember being interviewed by Laverne Cox, or we did kind of an interview.
She's a good friend of mine. Yes,
she's
Laverne.
So awesome.
Yes.
So awesome. But we really had this really deep conversation about what it's like in a lot of parts of this country as a transgender person to try to just even go to a healthcare provider who knows how to provide you healthcare and who treats you with dignity and respect. And so I feel like this is a huge part of our work going forward, and we're really proud to do it.
Wow, that is truly amazing. I want to give that a big hand, because one of the biggest things for me is that, yes, please.
Well, to you guys.
When we think about LGBT rights, we often think about the L and the G, right? So my question is, so as someone who identifies as a feminist, and the book that I
can
read...
Can we give it up for that?
I read a book by Bell Hooks. It was called Feminist Theory from Margin to Center. And it was the most transformative book in my entire life.
Yeah.
And what the book did was it helped me to understand that the work that we do must start at those who are the most marginalized.
That's right.
And I spend a lot of my days in locker rooms educating players about the intersection of homophobia and sexism.
Right.
So my question is there talk about how organizations like yours can partner with an organization like an HRC, mm-hmm. right, to understand that the root of homophobia is sexism,
yep.
so that if you can get these LGBT groups that have access and power, a lot of rich white men, how can they join the Planned Parenthood fight?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I'll say, I feel like it's interesting. I've just been meeting with a lot of LGBT groups and other progressive groups, because obviously there's a lot of work we all have to do mm-hmm. together here in these next few months and years ahead. And the exciting thing to me is when you bring millions of young people into your movement, they change the movement.
Oh, yes.
And they live intersectional lives, and they don't see sexual health and rights in one category and racial justice in another.
It's all connected.
It's all connected. And so I do believe that that is changing, and I have to give it up for young people for really forcing those conversations.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, absolutely. And I have to give it up to the reproductive justice movement that for 20 years has been fighting this fight. And if there were ever evidence that all of our issues come together, it's going to be this coming administration. And really the fights that I think that we have had over lifting up marginalized people in this country. And the thing that is very disturbing, there's many things that are disturbing about what we're facing, but it is, of course, the burden, whether it's on the attempted to defund Planned Parenthood or rescind the Affordable Care Act or take away birth control access or all these things. It hits low-income people the worst,
yes.
and it hits marginalized communities the worst. And frankly, they're the folks that did their job in this election, right? They did the right thing in this election.
Exactly.
And so it's really it's maddening and I would say energizing, because there's a lot of work we have to do to put folks in the center of this conversation. who have the most to lose and the most to gain.
Gotcha. As you lift up the work of Kimberly Crenshaw and intersectionality, can you give us some practical examples of the work that you've done with other organizations so people who in the audience can start to really think about how can they start to get more involved?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of different examples. I mean, we have been very proud at Planned Parenthood. One of the fights that we feel is very important is immigration rights in this country. We proudly serve. Sorry, I have like a cold. I'm sorry, guys. I know. It's just because I've been out on the road too much.
Just fighting a good fight.
There we go. That's what happens to you.
Zycam works well.
I know. One of the things that we feel really strongly about at Planned Parenthood is everyone should come to be able to get health care. I don't care your immigration status, your economic status, your whatever status. And so we've been really proud to partner with the immigrant rights movement and are today, because we're facing potential deportations now in this country, and we will stand with all immigrant people in this country and fight deportation as hard as we have to make sure it doesn't happen. But I'll give you a more specific example on the ground is, you know, I come from Texas, and a big part of my passion is making sure we get health care in the South. Because, you know, abortion may be legal, but it ain't available.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's no good to have a card, an insurance card that says you can get birth control if there's nobody to give it to you. And so we had a big fight in New Orleans, Louisiana, to open up a new health center there. From New Orleans? Love that. no, but I mean, it was really interesting. This is a city, well, it's a state where if you are a woman of color, a low-income woman of color, your access to healthcare is abysmal.
Very limited,
and it's really embarrassing. And we'd always had a little shotgun over on Magazine Street, but it wasn't anything to really be proud of. I mean, folks did good work there. But so we bought a piece of property. We're ready to build a health center. And it was a huge fight.
Wow.
And the only reason we were able to build that health center is two things. Is the reproductive justice community and the African-American community and the clergy stood with us to build that health center. And it was women-owned businesses and minority-owned businesses that poured the concrete and laid the bricks and built that place. And so it was kind of awesome to be back there this spring and cut the ribbon on it. But I think it means that intersectionality is more than words and issues. It's doing the work together.
Yes.
And I think that I do believe that it happens in communities. And that's the work that we have been doing. I think we're going to be doing even more of it together now, because we all have to stand with people who are going to be under attack anywhere, everywhere. And that includes the LGBTQ community all across this country.
Thank you so much for those examples.
I
want to remind our audience to make sure that you're filling out your question cards. They will start to bring them over to me, and we'll start asking Cecilia those actual questions too. I'm really fascinated with this idea that you're moving away from the language of pro-life and pro-choice. Please tell the audience why you're doing that and why it is important for all of us to start changing our language.
Well, it's interesting. So we, you know, that is sort of a binary language that was created decades ago. And what we found is that it left a lot of people out. It had become so politicized, and it didn't really reflect, oh my God.
I know, they're amazing, aren't they?
I love that.
I feel like Oprah up here, right?
Yeah, exactly. Inform, they do everything.
You get a car.
And
you get napkins. And you get.
There we go.
Exactly.
But what we found is that there were millions of people in this country who just didn't identify with these labels, and we weren't talking to them. And it was interesting. There were two states that tried to ban abortion, South Dakota and Mississippi. And these were both very conservative states. And if you had polled in those states, they would have been pro-life states.
Okay.
Right? And so you would have said, well, there's no chance that we could win these ballot initiatives. But when you went and actually talked to people, they actually believe they could hold two different thoughts at the same time, that they might have a personal feeling about abortion. And everyone does.
Yeah.
But that didn't mean they actually felt like all women had to agree with them or had that they could make the decision for all women. And in both of those states, we beat those ballot initiatives overwhelmingly and retained the right to legal abortion for women in those states. And And what it led us to is really understanding that what people in this country believe is, they believe Roe versus Wade should be the law of the land. Absolutely, 100%. They support that. And they believe that women should be able to make their own decisions about their pregnancies, not politicians, not judges, not Donald Trump, not Mike Pence. I mean, and this is really a fundamental thing that I think this incoming administration needs to understand, yeah, is that folks do not want to go back to a day when abortion was illegal and dangerous and women died. Healthy women died in emergency rooms routinely before abortion became legal, and we cannot go back to those days in America.
Wow.
It's
yes,
really important.
All right, so we've hem and hawed long enough. We got to talk about Trump a little bit.
Okay.
All right, because I'm getting a lot of questions around Trump, right?
Shocking.
Yeah. Shocking, right?
Yeah.
So the first question is, are you concerned about the Supreme Court overturning Roe? And are you worried that Congress could attempt to further restrict or ban abortion?
Yes and yes. I'm going to tell the tough part, and then I'm going to tell you a good story.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So right now, we don't have one justice on the Supreme Court because the Republicans in the United States Senate refused to entertain President Obama's nominee. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So so that the new president will be able to appoint a new justice. I don't think it will completely shift the balance.
No.
Of course. But yes, it's a danger. And so very important. And I mean, I know that Donald Trump said in this election that he thought, well, just the state should make this decision. So how is there a right that you're going to just say, well, you have a right? Some states, women are free. In some places, they're not. So that's going to be a big fight. I do believe this Congress, based on just their past activities, you know, they talk about they're going to create jobs and do all this infrastructure. Believe me, target number one is going to be Planned Parenthood and women. That's what they're going to go after. And so I think we're going to see that. But we're ready for them. We've been doing this 100 years. We're going to do it 100 more. And we're ready for the fight. But can I tell you one story about
please.
Texas? Okay. So, because I've been thinking about this. So 5 years ago, the state of Texas, when Rick Perry was governor, decided that his whole idea was he was going to get rid of Planned Parenthood in the state, okay, even though we'd been there for decades. We're one of the major health care providers for women. And so they shut down the women's health care program in Texas. And we didn't go away, but 80 health centers, mainly not ours, but women's health centers shut down. And women lost care. They lost cancer screenings. They lost birth control. It was devastating. Well, since that didn't work, then he decided he and the legislature were going to pass bills to restrict abortion so badly that women couldn't get them.
I remember.
And when they did that, you know what happened? The state of Texas erupted. People said enough is enough. And for days on end, folks came to the Capitol in Austin, Texas, people who had never been to the Capitol in Austin, Texas, and stayed until 2 and 3 in the morning testifying against these bills. Young people who had never done anything like this. Folks left their kids with friends in their town. College students hitchhiked. And we stayed till 2 and 3 in the morning, day after day after day, until that incredibly important moment when Wendy Davis did her historic filibuster.
Yes, Wendy.
And it was incredible. Literally, you could not get another person in the Capitol. There were so many people there. One of my favorite ones was a young man named Beau Guidry, 8 years old. Not only sat in the gallery in the Senate with his mom the whole time, but he live tweeted the entire thing. And my favorite tweet from Beau was, I thought I would be spending my summer at Six Flags and the swimming pool. Who knew I would be changing the world?
Oh, wow.
I know. And I'll never forget that last day walking in to the Capitol. And I saw a woman with her young son. He was probably 12 years old. And she pushed him. She said, show her your poster. And so this kind of shy kid held up a poster. He'd made a orange tag board. He'd written in magic marker. He said, I still have my mother because of cancer screenings at Planned Parenthood. And his mom, who was kind of crying, just said, thank you. And that's who we fight for. Yeah. That's who we fight for. And so we lost that fight. because we didn't have the votes, okay? And this is why this story is important. But we never gave up. In fact, we opened new health centers despite them, and we continued to provide abortion services. And people started telling their stories. Women talked about having to go to Mexico to buy pills over the counter and self-terminate a pregnancy without medical help. Women having to drive hundreds of miles. And 3 years later, that case went to the Supreme Court. And with three women justices, Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg, we say their names. Those three women, for the first time, a case that was only about women, they brought women's lived experience into that courtroom, and we won that case, and those laws are now unconstitutional.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just because we had a good lawyer arguing it or because we had the right justices. It was because people never gave up. And I think we have to remember that in these times, right? Because we're not going to have the votes in the next few months.
No, we're not.
But we can never give up. And that is, because in the long run, we will win. But there'll be some tough times in between.
You get me excited because you mentioned Roe v. Wade and Wendy Davis. So it's kind of Wade Davis, you know, which is my name. So I've been kind of an advocate for this.
We got to get you two together. Yeah.
What I think about the Trump presidency and Planned Parenthood has always fought to control their own narrative, right? How do you think that moving into a Trump presidency, you will have to change your tactics to make sure that people are getting the accurate information to describe what Planned Parenthood does?
Well, the crazy thing is, actually, people do know what we do. And that's because 1 in 5 women in this country have come to us for health care. And millions more have referred people to us for health care. And so I think, in fact, this is a crazy statistic. A few days before the election, there was a poll of Trump voters by the New England Journal of Medicine and Politico. 48% of Trump voters supported federal funding for Planned Parenthood. Okay? So
a lot to say there, but I won't.
His own constituency goes to Planned Parenthood. And so I think that the important thing in the months ahead are to drive a wedge and to really demonstrate to Donald Trump that, in fact, the people of America don't see Planned Parenthood as the problem. They see Planned Parenthood as the solution.
Yeah.
And that we have to lift up the voices of the millions and millions of alumni who've been to Planned Parenthood for health care at some point in their lifetime, including me, including probably some people in this room, and make sure those stories are out there. Because to me, when folks tell their stories, whether it's a woman who got her breast cancer detected at a Planned Parenthood, whether it's someone who didn't have insurance and was able to go for birth control, that's a narrative that's hard to rebut.
Yeah.
Even by folks who are opponents of women's rights.
Yeah.
So that's the work we have to do.
There's so much power in the sharing of stories.
Yeah.
One of the things I often say about the GOP or Republicans is that they're highly strategic, right? Like, that is the one compliment that I can give them, right? Is so when you think about a Trump presidency, what are some of the things that you think that they're going to try to intentionally do to work against Planned Parenthood?
What will they do to work against Planned Parenthood?
Yeah, like, so, because I think that they're just so strategic. I mean, they're like these evil geniuses, right?
I think they will overplay their hand, but I think they will go and try to defund us right off the bat. Mm. And if we can take a minute,
yes,
I'd love to explain what that means. So at Planned Parenthood, we see everyone. Our motto is care no matter what. And that's either a promise or a threat, depending on who you are. A lot of the folks that come to see us are on Medicaid. And that means they're low income and they qualify. And what Congress wants to do, well, actually not, what Mike Pence wants to do is to say that if you're on Medicaid, you can't use your Medicaid card and come to Planned Parenthood for health care. Mm. And it's really important that people understand this, because it's actually not even abortion, because Medicaid, for years, the Hyde Amendment has prevented, unfairly, I might add, unjustly, has prevented poor women from getting their abortions paid for, like other women do. But what they're talking about is ending access to birth control, to cancer screenings, to well woman visits, to STI testing and treatment. And that's what's at stake. And they will go after that right after the bat, and we have to fight them. And it's going to be a handful of senators that are going to make a difference there. And ironically, all of those senators, whether they're from Arizona or Nevada or Alaska, hundreds of thousands of people in their state go to Planned Parenthood for health care. So by them voting to defund Planned Parenthood, it's not actually about the funding for Planned Parenthood. It's about allowing people the right to choose the healthcare provider that they go to. And it's going to be a battle royal. It's going to be the biggest fight of our lifetime. And we're going to need every single one of you to help us fight it.
Yes, we are.
So I think that's going to be battle number one. Certainly they are going to introduce something to try to restrict abortion access in America. And it's already pretty restricted, particularly if you go to states like Louisiana or Texas or
Arkansas.
Definitely
in the South, yeah.
So what women need is equal access, not less access. But that's just going to be something we're going to have to fight on.
Gotcha.
For sure.
So I'm going to go to another audience question. And that question is, how do we bridge the fundamental philosophy differences between people who are pro-life and people who are pro-choice?
Well, I just actually think most people have the same philosophy. And again, I'm going to kind of reject the nomenclature.
I love that.
Because I think pro-life, I mean, who isn't pro-life? I mean, I've got three kids. I'm pro-life, right? I think the thing is we have to listen to people. And what we have found at Planned Parenthood is if you don't force people to, like, put on one hat or the other and score to go to their political corners, mm-hmm. you can have an incredible conversation. And so we really find it's helpful to say to folks, abortion is a very personal topic and sometimes a complicated topic. And you could just see folks' shoulders relax, right? Because you're not trying to say, bam, 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 bam. And then you can say, and we really think it's important that women be able to make their own decisions about pregnancy. And there's very few people in this country who don't know a woman who has faced a pregnancy that was complicated for some reason.
Exactly.
And that's the core value that I think we have to lift up. And I think we have to give people the right to have their own personal feelings about abortion. Some people say, I would never have an abortion. Some of those people actually end up changing their mind at some point in their lifetime. And many people have written stories and articles and books about that. But that's okay. I think the point is, we just believe that no matter what your personal views are, you don't have the right to make that decision for everybody else. And that is a... And so I think that is bridging the divide. And I think we can speak with empathy and compassion. And I think it's interesting. People at work at Planned Parenthood from all walks of life. Republicans, Democrats, religious, faith-based, not faith-based. Some people work at Planned Parenthood because of their faith. Mm. That is their expression of faith.
Yeah.
My friend Dr. Willie Parker, this is his expression of faith, right? And so I think it's important to not to fall into the trap of typecasting people who either support Planned Parenthood or go to Planned Parenthood or work at Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood represents America in every single corner, and we have to lift that up.
Wow,
more and more.
That's really beautiful. So I have a question here that to me is about you specifically and your rise, right? So the question is, what advice do you have for women beginning their careers in NGOs? What were some of the keys to your success?
Always being willing to do a job that no one else wanted. I'm just kidding. But only partially. Not about this job, but one is I think, look, I hope there's some of you out there that are thinking about a career in the nonprofit world and advocacy world, because frankly, we've never needed you more than we need you now. And I my mom, who some of you kindly remembered, so my mom was the first badass woman governor of the state of Texas, Ann Richards. and she just did stuff even though she wasn't supposed to. That was really kind of how she approached life. And in the South, you got to do that if you're a woman, right? They always say, like, what makes you Southern women so tough? It's like, if you're not tough, you don't survive. But, you know, she felt really strongly that if you are so fortunate to be able to choose what you do for a living, because a lot of folks don't get that choice. For years, I worked as a union organizer, and I organized low-wage workers, women who cleaned hotel rooms in New Orleans, who were janitors in downtown Los Angeles, who were hospital workers, and a lot of them didn't have any choices. They were just trying to support their family. We live a very privileged life in being able to choose what we do for a living. And Mom always said, you know, you can go a lot of places and get some fancy title, maybe make a lot of money, but there's nothing like having a job where people come up and say, thank you for making my life better. And that's the incredible privilege that I have at Planned Parenthood. I mean, it's amazing. I just landing here in San Francisco today, two women stopped me in the bathroom, said, aren't you that lady from Planned Parenthood? And then they wanted to tell me their story. So I think that in terms of the nonprofit work is find something that brings you joy and passion and hold out for that because it's out there and you'll have an incredible life. And the other unsolicited advice I'll give you from Ann Richards, and I know that her friend Joanne is here and a lot of other folks that probably got a lot of unsolicited advice from Ann Richards, but the thing that Mom said to me that I think that was the most important is remember, this is the only life you get. There's no do-overs. This is it. And so don't wait for someone to ask you or don't wait for someone to say, I think you'd be good at that. Just do it. And, you know, she used to always say to me, what's the worst thing that could happen? That didn't work out. You go do something else. And so I hope more people, particularly at this moment when people are turning to a lot of us and saying, what do we do? You know, what should we do? In some ways, I want to say, like, don't wait for me to give you the answer. Just go do it. Yeah. Just go do it. Because this isn't the time to wait around for someone to give you the instruction book. Stand up for your values. Stand up for what you believe. Support organizations that do the work that you believe in. Be part of the organized resistance. We're going to have to be, every single one of us.
Yeah.
Anyway.
With us both being Southerners, it sounds like our mothers were very, very similar. My mother used to always say that all work has dignity, right? So this question is about giving you some more work, actually. There seems to be a vacuum of the new generation of progressive leaders, and people are always asking, like, who can lead us the next 4 years? This question is, why not you?
I've got a big job. look, I think I'm really excited about a lot of young leaders that we do have in this country, and part of the joy of my work is investing in them and lifting them up. And I hope that coming out of this election that folks will invest in a whole nother generation. Obviously, you just sent one of them to the United States Senate, Kamala Harris, so thank you for that. I mean, nobody can fill Barbara Boxer's shoes, so let's be honest, but Kamala is going to make an impression immediately. And I see other folks around the country that are Stacey Abrams from Georgia, who literally she's putting Georgia on the map in this country. She is putting Georgia on the map. The Castro brothers in Texas, my friends Julian and Joaquin Castro, and on and on and on. I just think that we need parties and the Democratic Party to invest in a whole new generation of folks because they're out there and they are ready to lead. And we've got to believe in it and support them. And so I have a lot of hope.
So you're saying you don't want to run for president? Is that what you're telling us?
I mean, I'm not saying I'd never do it, but...
this is a very hopeful question. It speaks to, Do you envision a time when abortion is not a contentious issue in this country?
Well, I mean, I think it may be always an issue that people have strong personal feelings about, but actually there is a consensus on abortion in this country, and that's that it should be legal and it should be safe. And so I mean, there's a lot of things we disagree on in America, but in some ways, this is one of the things that there's more agreement on than a lot of other issues. Yeah. And so I really reject the notion that I feel like the media is always putting out there, oh my gosh, and it's like people, they want birth control to be available. They want young people to have access to sex education. They, in fact, most people can't figure out why birth control isn't free for everybody, and it should be. And they want abortion to be safe and legal and available in their community. And so I just feel like, I mean, we always have work to do, but I'm telling you, if this administration comes in and takes steps to make Planned Parenthood unavailable for people and make abortion illegal in America, there is going to be an uprising in this country like you have never seen, and we're gonna help lead it for sure, for sure.
My father used to always say, there's nothing more dangerous than a woman with a plan. So I believe you. I believe you. I want to pivot and talk a little bit about the work that Planned Parenthood is doing globally, right? Because stats show that most young women die during a pregnancy. Can you talk more about what Planned Parenthood is doing globally?
Right. Yeah, no, we're very excited about, so Planned Parenthood here in the U.S., we fund a lot of programs in Africa and in Latin America, some of the most exciting work happening. And it's not only about ensuring that abortion is safe and available to women, but we invest a ton in young people because I do believe that's the future of this globe. I mean, that's what they give me more hope than anything. And then we're part of International Planned Parenthood, which is actually in hundreds of countries around the globe. One cool thing, though, because we've been doing so much work with technology here, we have now expanded it. And so one of the things that we found is that obviously in the U.S., this is how everything is now mobile, right? For young people, right? I mean, this next generation, Generation Z, as they call it, 12 to 18 or 19-year-olds, they're digitally native. There isn't any other thing. And so the same is true, and we're working in Nigeria and Ecuador. We launched a global mobile program so that young people could connect with us on their mobile phones and get access to information and healthcare in their home country. Now, in 6 months, 1 million folks have come on, young people have come on to actually get information on their cell phone. To me, this is going to be the radical transformation of access to information and care, not just in the U.S., but around the world. And it's really exciting to be as part of a movement leading that change. So that, to me, is exciting. But we've got a lot of work to do. And one of the reasons we've got to fight so hard to maintain the rights that women have in this country is because everyone's looking around the globe. We cannot let women go backwards in the U.S. because the ripple effect is too huge around the world.
One of the things that's happening is that specifically in the South, there are states where women are being radically not given access to services. What can folks who live in states that are less threatened by access to services do to help states that are more?
I think, listen, support organizations that are working in the southern states, for sure, and not just Planned Parenthood. Obviously, there are a number of our reproductive justice organizations that are based in the South. Sister Song is based in the South. There are organizations in Tennessee, Louisiana. So do your homework and go out there and look online and support those organizations. These are usually small, scrappy, grassroots groups that could really use support from folks in places like San Francisco. And look, I think the other thing that you can do is keep moving the ball forward in California. I'm so proud of what people in California have done. I mean, you are redefining reproductive healthcare access in the world by the advances that are being made in California. And believe me, when I travel to states like Indiana and Tennessee and Louisiana, it's important to have a North Star. So keep making progress here. It makes a huge impact because people, they have hope. They have hope that things will get better. And you are making enormous change here. And I just can't say enough about Planned Parenthood in this part of the world. Hundreds of thousands of people every year get services at Planned Parenthood in California. So I hope you'll support the organizations and the staff that are here. One thing that has really struck me is I was actually in Chicago this week at the University of Chicago. It was so awesome. I got to speak at the University of Chicago Law School, where President Obama used to be. I mean, it was so amazing. But I met with a bunch of doctors there and clinicians who worked for Planned Parenthood. And, you know, we were talking about the fact that the morning after the election, when probably a lot of you were just trying to figure out whether you could get out of bed, they had already gotten up and gotten out of bed and opened the doors of clinics, not only in Chicago, but all across this country, because folks were waiting there for them to provide the healthcare that they needed. And that, to me, is the resiliency of this organization is in good times and in bad, we're there for folks. And so I appreciate folks being here for folks here in California every day. Yeah.
Yes, please clap for that, please, yes. This is a really important question here. Many women in the U.S., despite all that Planned Parenthood does, still can't get access to abortion because of travel costs and et cetera. Are you aware of any resources that exist to help women travel?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad whoever asked that question, because I think this is going to become more and more important. So there are abortion funds all across the country. And there's a national network of abortion funds. There are local state-based funds. And this is the work they do, is to make sure that women have access, whether it's travel costs or being able to stay in a hotel
room.
Yeah, because
as well,
look, in a lot of places, women have waiting periods. I mean, it's outrageous, the barriers that women face. And, of course, low-income women face it the worst. And so I would say, please support your local funds. Incredibly important. And that's going to be even more important as I think we see renewed assaults. And, of course, that's the irony, is the states that have already the least access to care that are the first to pass more and more restrictions.
Oh, yeah.
And true in my home state of Texas as well.
As Baldwin says, they always come for the weak ones first.
That's right. That's exactly right.
As you mentioned, kind of the rolling back of stuff, how do you see sex education in schools being attacked under a Trump presidency also?
I'm not real impressed with his nominee for the Department of Education.
Or and, HUD or anything, right?
I mean, anything. Just like. Look, listen, even under this administration, we still fund, as a country, inaccurate sex education in America in some parts of this country, and programs that are abstinence only, that don't give kids the information they need. And this is going to be a big fight.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the crazy thing is, all the research shows that when young people have information about their bodies, about healthy relationships, about birth control, about sexually transmitted infections, they actually are more likely to delay sexual activity until they're ready. And when they do become sexually active, they're so much more likely to use protection and to use birth control. So it is crazy that we wouldn't give young people the information they need to live healthy and safe lives. And parents in this country want sex education for their kids because they don't know what to do, right? Yeah. So I think this is something we have to fight on because the American people are with us. Congress, these guys haven't had sex education in years. And
or sex.
So, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Just two friends talking. Sorry, it just came out.
No.
Just two friends talking.
No, it's huge. The other thing, though, is I think it's why. Yeah, sorry, that was a bad, yeah. But I mean, it's all, no, you go in and try to talk about sex education, it's just like, whoa. They just get that look in their eyes. But that's the other reason why I'm so excited about the work we're doing online. Because if you're a young person in Texas, in Waco, where I was born, and you don't get sex education, because I think the state policy is abstinence only. Because as our former governor, Rick Perry, said, it worked for him. Whatever that meant. So if you're a young person in Waco, Texas, you can go to Planned Parenthood. You can go to Planned Parenthood online. You can text with someone at Planned Parenthood. And so we just have to find more ways of disrupting and taking away barriers and being there for young people, whether it's at 2 and 3 in the morning, when they actually need somebody that they can talk to. And I think that's going to be, unfortunately, I fear this new administration is going to take us backwards in sex education. So we just got to get out there and get it to kids.
Yeah, I think because they don't know what they're doing, they don't want any of us to know what we're doing, right? It's just kind of one of those things.
Right? No, that's right. Well, and I think, look, and I know that a lot of your work is on LGBT information, services, and rights. And that's a really sad thing.
It is.
And I mean, you can probably write another book about this. It's just the scary thing is young LGBT kids in these states who, for many of them, Planned Parenthood may be the only place they can go and have an honest conversation about sexuality, about sexual health. And we just cannot afford for that to happen to a whole other generation of young people.
Yes. I'm actually writing a piece for Vice.com, and I talk about very openly that I didn't know about gay sex, right? I couldn't ask my mom, right?
Right.
I couldn't ask my dad. Maybe I could, right? But there was really no spaces for me to go to ask these questions. And I wish more people who are LGBT knew that the Planned Parenthood was a place that they can go and ask these actual questions too. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of interesting. So one of my friends who I've met in New York, he's now a friend, but I met him and he's this really successful business guy now. And he said, "You're from Planned Parenthood." He said, "When I grew up in Plano, Texas, and I was a young gay man, and I couldn't talk to my parents, I became a peer educator at Planned Parenthood."
Wow.
Because that was the one place I could go, and they talked about sex, and they talked about it openly, and it literally changed his life. Hmm. And so that to me is, I think that it's not only Planned Parenthood isn't only a safe place to go and get services and information, it's a place to be loud and proud and become an activist and an advocate. And that is a very cool thing about now the thousands of young people we have trained, not only as sex educators, but now as leaders.
Yeah.
They are the future of this movement, and they are the future of this country. And as we talked about earlier, they see how all these issues intersect. They're teaching us.
So as you think about the way that your works as it intersects, this is a tough one for you, I think. It says Planned Parenthood has faced some criticism on ethnic inclusiveness, specifically in Asian and South and Latin countries, in the lack of leadership at the executive level. How are you kind of, what tangible efforts are you kind of doing to combat that?
Is this leadership? I'm sorry, I missed the last part of the question.
As far as your executive leadership team, that there's a lack of diversity there.
Yeah. I can't speak for every plan. We have an incredibly diverse executive leadership team at nationally, and I hope that that's work that's happening everywhere. I think that's one of the reasons that I'm excited about engaging more young people because, look, the hope is the most diverse generation we have ever had in the United States of America. And I think they are changing not only us at Planned Parenthood, but they're changing other movements as well. But look, I would hope, and certainly here in the Bay Area, I think it's always been an organization that has lifted up leadership. But it's important that our boards, our volunteers, our staff, and everyone in the executive team represent the diversity of this country, and not only ethnically and racially, but in terms of sexual orientation, sexual preference, and identity. But thanks for the question.
No, yeah,
super
it was
important
a great question.
Work.
We're almost done here, but this one here is also wonderful. It says, Can you speak a bit more about being an escort volunteer for Planned Parenthood? And what's the origin of that?
Of being an escort?
Yes.
So, and there's probably some escorts here. Are there any escorts here tonight? Love the escorts. Thank you. So, unfortunately, still today, in a lot of parts of the country, women get harassed going into Planned Parenthood. Well, not just women, folks. And so we train escorts to be folks that help people get into clinics safely and are reassuring. And I will tell you, since this election, there has been an explosion of people volunteering at Planned Parenthood,
wow,
including to be escorts. So if you want to be an escort at Planned Parenthood, get in touch with folks here at Northern California or at Marmonte. We train people.
Okay.
And it's one of some of the proudest folks in the organization. We have escorts and been doing it for decades. And it's sad that we still need them. No one should be harassed going into access healthcare in America.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it's still an issue. So, but we have been overwhelmed by the number of people wanting to volunteer again. And not just in San Francisco, all across the country. I mean, here is one of the, you know, you're looking for some, like, light at the end of the tunnel here after this election. The day after the election, folks are bringing baked goods. Mm. They're bringing cakes and cookies to our clinics. They're volunteering. And one of the most interesting things is, in the 2 days after this election, we had a 900% increase in requests for IUDs at Planned Parenthood.
Wow.
Can you believe that? And it's continued. And not just IUDs, although that was the biggest.
Explain to some of the men in the audience what an IUD is, maybe.
So, an intrauterine device. It's a long-acting method of.
A lot of sisters, so I know.
Yeah. It's a highly effective method of birth control. It's covered under the Affordable Co Act for no cost, so go get one right now if you need one. And we provide them at Planned Parenthood, and a lot of places don't. But not just IUDs. I mean, we do all kinds of birth control, 18 different kinds of birth control. But here I have two thoughts about this. One is, thank goodness they knew to call Planned Parenthood. And I think partly that is the education we have done over these last 4 years with President Obama, who, again, I just have to say, will go down as one of the finest presidents we've ever had in the United States of America. So all that education and training clinicians and IUDs and other long-acting methods has really paid off. So that's all the good news. The sad news is the thought that women are so concerned about losing birth control access that they are now literally calling us and saying, I want to get an IUD that will last throughout the Trump administration. No woman should be having to make those kinds of decisions about her health care just because of who's president of the United States of America.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely. I mean, we're going to be there to serve them for sure.
Yeah.
But it is phenomenal, really the panic that has ensued for women all across the country who are afraid that, as the Republicans have promised, that they're going to get rid of the birth control benefit.
Yeah.
And can I just brag on this for a second?
Sure.
Listen, newsflash, this just in. We are at a 30-year low for unintended pregnancy in the United States of America. And it is not because people quit having sex. And that's important to know. It's because women are getting better methods of birth control, and not only at Planned Parenthood, but around the country, because insurance is covering it. And this is a nonpartisan issue.
Yeah.
This is not, why in God's name we put politics in the middle of healthcare, I do not know. Because there is not a single person in this country who wants women to get pregnant when they don't want to be. And the other good news is we're at an all-time historic low for teenage pregnancy in America.
Mm.
And
that's a big one this time.
So, it's big. So we just got to keep doing this work. And I do think it's important. I know a lot of folks have been asking about what they can do. You got to stand up for Planned Parenthood, because we're going to be under attack. But stand up for the right to sexual and reproductive health care in every form, wherever you see it. Call your Planned Parenthood and go there for health care, because we're going to need you. Make a donation. Contribute to other organizations that work in this arena. And don't wait to be asked. This is a time for everyone to stand up, and I know you will. I know you will, and millions more are as well.
And give money again, right?
And
let's say
that
again. Give money,
do that.
Right?
Yeah.
Give money, right?
And tell your stories. I mean, one thing we didn't talk about tonight, but I just think it's really important. Somebody will just end with this story. I don't know how much time we have, but so 4 years ago, I got to volunteer for President Obama in his campaign, which was like one of the honors of my life.
I did too. I
thought it was crazy. Yes, so awesome. And no matter where I went, whatever state or little headquarters, a woman would come up to me and shake my hand. And then she'd whisper to me, you know, I was a patient at Planned Parenthood. Mm. And then sometimes she would tell me her story. And so 4 years later, I had the great honor of volunteering the entire month of September and October, actually, for Hillary Clinton, for her campaign for presidency. And and the same thing happened. I would go, and there would be, you know, every health center, a woman would come up to me and, or a young person, and tell me their story. But this time they didn't whisper it. They said it right out loud.
Wow.
And that, to me, is the change we got to see in this world. We will not change the politics in America until we change the culture in America. Mm. And a culture that embraces sexuality, sexual identity and preference, that embraces abortion as a right, embraces birth control and the ability of women and all people to make their own decisions about their health care. I feel like we're on the cusp of doing that, and we're going to have to do it now more than ever. I just have to shout out not only folks like Laverne Cox, but Shonda Rhimes. You know, when Olivia Pope has an abortion on TV.
Yes.
And I think taking away the stigma and shame that is too often clouded issues of reproductive health care, and we can do that, and we are doing that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a tradition here with Inform that you have to offer a 60-second idea that someone could change the world in. So what would that be?
Oh, my God. I think y'all made me do this last time.
A 60-second idea to change the world.
Wow.
This pause doesn't count as part of your 60 seconds.
Okay. No, I mean, look, it's because it's the work I do. I mean, I do believe that young people are going to change this world, so I always believe in investing in young people. You know, look up in your organization and figure out if you're investing in young people, and if you're not, do.
Okay.
Because they're the last group that gets attention. But the way we could really change things in this world, and not just for women, but for everyone, is if we made safe and legal abortion and birth control free for everybody in this country. And if we did that, which we can do, and we must do, it would change the opportunities, not only for women, but for families and communities, and for men as well. And I hope I live to see that day. I think I will. I think I will. So anyway, thank you.
Let's give our shero, Celia Richards, a big hand.
Thank you. You're great.
No, I want to give you a
hug. That was great.
I want a hug.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks for what you do. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Okay. All right.